Dr. Chrissy Stroup has been with us a number of times over the years, including our coverage of the hashtag Empty the Pews campaign. Now Dr. Stroup has published a book with the title Empty the Pews, Stories of Leaving the Church. And I am delighted that it brings her back to State of Belief. Chrissy, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you so much for having me, Wilton. It's always a pleasure.
How did you decide that a social media campaign could translate into a formidable book like this one?
Well, thank you for calling it formidable. I do hope it'll really break through and start some important conversations. When I started working on the book with my friend Lauren O'Neill, who's a professional editor, and in terms of the editorial work, definitely the MVP of the book, we didn't have that title in mind. In fact, before 2017, when I coined the hashtag Empty the Pews to protest Christian right complicity in Charlottesville, and to do that by talking about how bigotry in the church is driving young people out of the church, mm-hmm. and not just young people. So at first, we wanted to call the book By the Rivers of Babylon, Apostates Remember Believing, because we thought that exilic motif and nostalgia was something important to bring to the book, and it's certainly still there. But then we realized that there are already a lot of books and artworks and various things called that. And Lauren suggested that we use the hashtag and make it the title of the book because the way she was thinking about it, the book attempts to continue those same kind of conversations that we started online. And as soon as she suggested that, I thought, well, yeah, that's a great idea.
I want to affirm up front that this is not a condemnation of all religion, but rather of toxic religion and the toxic communities. Have I got that right?
Yes, that is correct. I'm not an anti-theist. I'm not anti-religious. I absolutely believe in working with genuinely inclusive, caring, progressive believers like yourself, and just making those contacts in society. You know, democracy depends on pluralism and the kind of, nowadays, I suppose, more old-fashioned Baptist stance on separation of church and state was, that they should be separate for the benefit of both church and state.
You're exactly right. Chrissy, can you briefly describe one or two of the intensely personal stories that you present in this book?
Sure. So there are a lot of them that speak to me in some ways. I think one that is very personally meaningful to me is the essay by my friend Rebecca Matthews, because she and I graduated from the same Christian high school. And in fact, when I was a senior and the editor of the yearbook, she was on yearbook staff. So we knew each other. She knew she was gay by that time. I did not. And so her essay, A Softer Answer, explores that experience of, wrestling with being gay in an environment in which you're told that that's a sin. And I do think she wrote about that quite elegantly and beautifully. I like the ambivalence of that essay as well, because, again, we didn't want to produce another sort of new atheist book, even though Lauren and I would both call ourselves atheists at this point. We understand that religion varies widely, and there are a lot of books already out there that are full of essays making supposed intellectual arguments against the existence of God that are just, they're dull and they're arrogant, and I find them very unhelpful. Rebecca Matthews' essay I found very powerful. Liz Lenz's essay as well, about, looking for some kind of utopia, using religion to do that. I think it's also really beautiful in its just sort of openness and vulnerability and ambivalence. Even though religion doesn't work for her anymore, she still explores the depth of those feelings that she had and continues to have.
Yeah. I'd like for you just to touch on the concerns that led you to launch this whole ministry kind of hashtag Empty the Pews campaign.
Sure. Well, I'd say it came out of a sort of a couple of things. And there's one kind of direct cause, which is that after, you know, the white supremacist atrocities at Charlottesville, in which a protester died, I was looking around at the Twitter feeds and social media feeds of right-wing evangelical leaders and seeing that they were either being silent on the whole thing after Trump said, you know, there are very fine people on both sides, or they were going out of their way to defend Trump as, quote-unquote, not racist. You know, Robert Jeffers went on TV and said that Trump doesn't have a racist bone in his body. And before that, we'd been having, a number of us online had been having discussions just about, you know, leaving evangelicalism, many of us leaving religion altogether because of how oppressive we had found it growing up. And so it came out of those discussions. But then in that moment when I was just so disgusted with, you know, this support for Trump and racism and authoritarianism, I was tweeting a thread about it. And the hashtag just kind of came to me in the moment because I was thinking, you know, these kinds of Christian right leaders and authoritarian leaders in general, authoritarian personalities, they don't listen to criticism. Mm. They only understand power. And there's really not much that the very powerful people on the Christian right are afraid of, though they always like to claim that they're the victim. You know, that's also a classic authoritarian tactic. But mm-hmm. we do know they are worried about declining church attendance numbers and about losing the youth. And so I thought the hashtag Empty the Pews could speak to that. If we gain some collective visibility by telling our stories of why the evangelical church, or it's widened beyond that, so why maybe the Catholic Church or the LDS Church lost us, then we would make a splash. The message would get through. They may choose to ignore it, but they'd have to know that it existed, and that, you know, some of us who left, who they would very much like to erase, you know, we're breaking through to the public and we're telling our own stories.
Hmm. Chrissy, what are the experiences that are shared by the largest number of the people that you profile in this book? What I'm getting at is I'm interested in knowing if you discerned patterns among the people who contributed to the book.
We definitely did. And there are also a lot of diversity in the stories, and we aimed for that in selecting the ones that we did. And the way the book came together was we did put out a call for proposals, and we got some essays that way. And we also reached out to certain people to ask if they would contribute. And so we put this thing together. And I think we were both interested from the beginning in both sort of the commonalities and the diversity of this experience. And, you know, it's really interesting to see some of the same things that bothered and alienated people. And the first thing I guess I'll say about that is in ex-evangelical sort of spaces in general, or ex-fundamentalist spaces, you'll find that they are disproportionately female. Because these kinds of toxic, you know, authoritarian churches are patriarchal. Mm-hmm. So they're disproportionately harmful to women. And you'll also find a lot of queer narratives in this book, because that's, you know, another sort of human experience that is just not accommodated in religious fundamentalism.
Yeah.
And we also kind of looked at the global reach of American evangelicalism in some of the essays. One of my favorite essays is by a Singaporean woman, Ruby Theagarajan, who wrote about growing up with the American-style prosperity gospel in an American-style megachurch in Singapore, where they sold American books and American sermons on tape.
Chrissy, why is it important that faith leaders in particular carefully read this book, and what do you want to be sure they hear in it?
Mm. That's a great question. And I want to say up front, you know, I'm really glad to have in the sort of endorsement blurbs at the front of the book, in the front matter, some endorsements from Christians, including Reverend Dr. Andre Johnson. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's a social justice-oriented pastor. He's often out on the streets in Memphis protesting. He's also a prolific scholar, impressive man. And he has supported this project from the beginning because he thinks that, that people in the church really need to listen to this and wrestle with this in order to, I guess, you know, look inside themselves and try to be better if necessary, and just understand how religion has been used to harm people. And, you know, it, maybe the way you practice it doesn't do that, but it has happened to a lot of people, and it's something that I think we need to be having public discussions about, sort of reckoning with in America today. And, you know, faith leaders who may feel like this hits a little more close to home, I would also very much appreciate it if they read it and just really tried to hear us instead of deflecting, because I can say that in a lot of our experiences, that usually doesn't happen, not with people from the kinds of traditions that we left and that we're criticizing in this book. And you see all these think pieces these days about, oh, how can we get more millennials in the church? Should we have a cooler rock show for the worship service? Should we have, you know, a better coffee shop? And, you know, there are answers to these questions. You might not like them, but we're trying to talk to you, so just hear us.
Good. Well said. What did you learn in putting this book together that you didn't know already?
I think it confirmed a lot of things in some ways that maybe I suspected but didn't know about, you know, what kinds of patterns we might see in people who do end up leaving religion. I also learned some things about the history and contemporary realities of certain places that I'm not so familiar with. Some of the essays, as I mentioned, touches on Singapore. One describes events that took place in South Africa. It has something to do with the mission field. That's the essay by J.L. Powers. And my own essay is about my short-term youth missionary experience in Russia in 1999 and 2000. I went with an organization called, I know what it's called. The name is failing me. Oh, it's called One Mission Society now. It was just called OMS. Then, because they had changed the original name from Oriental Mission Missionary Society. It's based in Greenwood, Indiana. But anyway, it was interesting to see sort of, you know, in J.L. Powers' experiences, what was similar about evangelical missionary experiences in different places.
Do you feel like your work, as well as that of allies like the group Church Clarity, is making organized religion in this country take more seriously the needs of the very real people who come to church and to better recognize the consequences of exclusionary or abusive practices?
I think it depends on – I don't know if I can speak for all organized religion here, but do I think it's making a difference? I do. I really love the folks at Church Clarity and the work that they're doing to just, you know, try to get churches to say whether they really are LGBTQ affirming or not, because a lot of them want to be cagey about that and, you know, reel you in saying they welcome everyone. And then you find out later that they won't perform a same-sex wedding, or they won't let you work in ministry if they know that you're gay or volunteer for the church or be a leader of any kind. And people get hurt in those situations. Mm-hmm. So I think that is having an impact. You know, some churches want to be on that registry so that people know. And the ones who don't, you can pretty much figure you should probably stay away from them.
So what's next for you?
Well, I'm going to be doing some events to promote this book. And I'm also in the early stages of working on what would be my first single author book. The working title is Generation Culture Wars. And I want to look back at the last 50 years or so of how the Christian right, you know, became the Christian right that it is today, and specifically, you know, what sorts of things they subjected their children to throughout these transformations. So what I want to do is do a lot of interviews with people who survived the kind of right-wing evangelical upbringing that I had, Christian school kids like me or people who were homeschooled, and go through various thematic chapters like the Satanic Panic, the Christian school and homeschooling movements, purity culture, kind of like what Linda K. Klein did for purity culture in her book Pure, but broader, and I would give more representation to people who end up with no religion as well as people who end up in better religion, because that book really focuses mostly on people who still love Jesus, believe in Jesus, but they just want to talk about how purity culture was harmful and it's something that we should get rid of. So yeah, I want to explore the culture wars that way, really kind of look at what happened to us, the children of the culture wars.
Well, keep in touch with us because we want to know what you're doing and how it's going. Dr. Chrissy Stroup is a scholar, a writer, and an articulate commentator whose important work has included prominent roles in the ex-evangelical movement, unrelentingly honest about both struggles and achievements. She has just published a new book titled Empty the Pews, Stories of Leaving the Church, a collaboration with Lauren O'Neill. Chrissy, congratulations on this book, and thanks so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Wilson. I'll always be glad to come back anytime.